Take a unique look at the National Football League with Pro Football View from the East, a program dedicated to bringing listeners in-depth coverage on all 32 teams. Join host Joe Tufaro, a lifelong Giants fan, and Dennis Agapito, a die-hard Jets fan, as they offer up hard-hitting opinions and analysis on the NFL from a New York perspective. So, let's start the show. From the East, here's Joe and Dennis.
All right, everybody. Hello and welcome to another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East. This is one of your hosts, Dennis Agapito. And as usual, I am joined by a good friend, a guy who I really look up to, respect, kind of like the Padawan learner, and he's the Jedi Master, Mr. Joe Tufaro. Since we saw at the halftime the big Star Wars trailer, Joe, or Yoda, as we like to call him sometimes. Welcome in. Good to have you aboard. How you doing, my friend?
You only look up to me because you're only 5'9". That's why you look up to me.
I'm actually taller than that, but you're like 6'7", so everybody looks up to you.
Oh, that's great. Great. Everything's good except for the debacle from Monday night that I'd rather not talk about. But, of course, that's what we're going to open the show with. So let's just get right into it.
Yeah, let's jump right into it, gang. Just quickly, we're going to give you some information on how to keep in contact with Joe and myself. I'm on Twitter at PFVFE. Joe is at Tufton, T-U-F-D-A-N. So let's start. We're going to start off a little Giant news. And, Joe, how about some good news for us about the Giants? And we'll get into Monday night in a minute. Daniel Fells, we talked about him a little bit last week. He's been released from the hospital. Seems like he's finally come out of the woods with this MRSA infection, and that's really good to hear. I mean, I think no matter whether you're a fan of a team or whatever, from a personal perspective, you wanted this guy to just get healthy, not have any more issues, and now he's finally seems like he's home with his family, doing well, and has kind of beat this and no more surgeries, and that's great to hear.
Yeah, they put it out this morning that he went home, as they said, you know, home with his kids, which is nice to hear. And, you know, it's just a good part of the story that he, you know, it says returned home this week after battling a life-threatening MRSA infection in a world full of calloused causes and frozen feelings hardened by pervasive selfishness. It is filled to return home to his young children warms the heart. You know, it's nice that, again, you get to know some of these guys personally, and we forget that, you know, when they say, I'm just trying to take care of my family, everybody kind of scoffs at them. Because they're making tens of millions of dollars, but it is still what it's about. They're still just regular people. They're not super heroes. They're not anything. They're not Jedi masters. They are people. And so, you know, you hope that everybody's okay. And again, one of the reasons why I like my team so much, they always remind you of this, that, yeah, we're here to win football games and we're in a cutthroat business and there's all kinds of stuff going on, but personal aspect still takes over. You know, it was funny, Dennis, just to bring up one really good thing from the week past was when the Giants did their Ring of Honor inductees and they had, you know, OC and Chris Snee, they also inducted a guy who was 92 years old when he retired last year, and he was the trainer for the team. And, you know, you and I talked about continuity and in ways and building a tradition and building a new feeling around a team. When you bring in a new coach or bring in a new GM, you know, we talk about that often. And here's a guy who was hired by Jim Lee Howell, you know, and remained on the staff through every coach. And they also have a guy there, Murph, that we call Murph. He's head of security for the Giants, who met Bill Parcells in a restaurant / bar in New Jersey. And then he's still with the team. So he's gone through Parcells, he's gone through Ray Hanley, he's gone through Dan Reeves, he's gone through Tom Coughlin, and he's still there. And I think that's part of what, again, makes this team a little bit special to me and also keeps that feeling amongst them of they're Giants. It's not just about the players at the time. It's not just about the coaching staff at the time. It's about the New York Giants. And I think that's what a lot of organizations are missing.
Yeah, you know, I really can echo those sentiments being from the opposite side where the Jets have not really have, there's a fine line that you got to walk. as an organization. And you mentioned about the cutthroat aspect of football. But there's that fine line that you got to walk between, okay, is it time to pull the trigger on a coach, a front office person, whatever it is, or is it, are the circumstances beyond their control and they're moving in the right direction? Do we need to be patient? I mean, for Jet fans, patience is a four-letter word. And I can understand it's been a long time. I don't want to be patient. I don't want to wait. But, I mean, let's take your Mets, for example. I mean, didn't they make a trade a while back? R.A. Dickey went to Toronto, and they brought in some guys that are kind of helping them now. Sometimes you look back on a decision that maybe at that time wasn't so popular, but ended up being a real good, solid decision for the organization moving forward. And you know what? Nobody's won a championship or been successful without having to make a difficult decision that maybe was unpopular at the time, but turned out to be the right one moving forward.
Yeah, and you have to do that. And again, it probably wasn't too unpopular at the time once everybody found out who was coming back, but you didn't know. You had, you know, you brought back two guys who might have been injury prone, who were unproven, and but that's how you do it. And you know, again, you have to take those chances and you have to do certain things at certain times. But again, it has to be done from an organizational point, and also our famous line, Dennis, that you and I love so much, you know, it has to be done as a personnel decision, not a personal decision. And All the stuff that happened with OC, you know, you go back and all of the angst and all of the bad blood and all of the, you know, sitting out and I want this and I want that and I'm not playing because I'm hurt and I don't feel well and blah, 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 blah. But when push comes to shove, he comes back and we put him in the Ring of Fame, you know, the Ring of Honor, and he deserves it and all's forgiven. And so once you separate those things, I think you become a lot more successful.
Yeah. And you know, look, that has definitely been a staple of the Giants organization, the longevity, the kind of the tradition. And that is why when people look at the Giants and Jets often, and, you know, again, the Jets are kind of looked at like maybe like, I don't know, not as classy. Let's put it that way. I don't really like that being looked at that sometimes in that manner, but you can understand why with some things that have happened, maybe that's kind of the reputation you've got. Hopefully that's changing for the better for the Jets. They obviously have gotten off to a good start here. We're going to discuss them a little bit later. Why don't we kind of stick with the Giants here and actually get into some meat and potatoes of what happened Monday night. Now, Joe, this was sloppy with a capital S game. Penalties, turnover, you know, but the Giants broke out to a lead, and it looked like it was going to be, you know, all, so far so good in that first drive. But after that, just downhill, the Giants' offensive line didn't look like they could protect Eli. Eli made a couple of poor decisions. I think there was one where Randall slipped a little bit and it looked like he went to his secondary receiver. Was it Walter Thurman who picked him off for that pick six, Joe?
Nolan Carroll.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. Nolan Carroll picked him. And also, here's something to look at. I mean, DeMarco, two of the wins I know, because one of them I was at, which was the Jets-Philadelphia game, DeMarco Murray had over 100 yards, and he had over 100 yards here. I mean, Sam Bradford threw three interceptions. I mean, it wasn't a very pretty game to watch, but somehow or another, they still managed to win by 20 points. If you just kind of looked at the turnovers and some of the other things, you might say, hey, this game was close. Maybe the Giants pulled it out. But really, allowing those rushing yards, I thought, was uncharacteristic of the Giants, and that's what allowed Philadelphia to ultimately be successful, besides the fact that your offensive line was really under siege all night. I don't know. Maybe we can get into Will Beatty a little bit, but what were your feelings on it? That was my takes on the game. Let's hear from your perspective.
Yeah, and you and I texted during the game, and we kind of got back and forth, and, you know, it started out so good. Special teams started out right, and, you know, right from the opening kickoff, you and I questioned – the Eagles taking the ball right away, deferring coming out of the opening kickoff, and, you know, the Giants walking down the field, and all of a sudden it seemed like I think the adjustment the Eagles made was, if you're going to throw short all night, we're going to make you be accurate because we're going to be on you. We're going to start jumping these. We're going to make these two guys that have bad hamstrings, Reuben Randall and Odell Beckham, beat us long, and then we're going to make you have to block our guys up. And I think after the first quarter, that's what they did. They said, we're going to start jumping routes, and, you know, we'll see how you do then. And then if you have to take more, if you have to hold onto the ball longer, you probably won't be able to because our rushers are better than your right tackle, which they are going to need to address pretty quickly because Marshall Newhouse obviously is not the answer. But I think that was the switch. And then, you know, Rashad Jennings fumble, the Danelle, you know, they call it an interception. As Coughlin said yesterday, I'm not sure why they call that an interception. Let's call it what it is. And it's a guy getting the ball ripped out of his hands. You know, those turnovers in crucial spots and why they were driving and where they could have put 14, 21, 17 points up on the board before the Eagles ever got started were just killers. And then, you know, the interceptions that Bradford threw were just stupid. You know, that turned out to be just long punts in a way, and they weren't as critical to their drives as much as I think the Giants were. And then also, you know, just, again, you get into that rhythm thing of we all know what they're doing. You know, even when they went for fourth and one, if you noticed, you know, Eli turns around and got to move the running back to the other side of the formation. Well, he's telling everybody which side they're running to at that point. And you just can't get into that spot where you're giving away what you're going to do. And they just weren't prepared. I don't know what it is. It's just sometimes they fall back into old habits. As Coach Coughlin said yesterday, you know, I thought we were done with this intentional grounding stuff. I thought we were done with the bad ball security. I thought we were done with not playing the ball in the secondary. You know, Cooper Taylor lost his job by not going – and playing the ball on the Riley Cooper touchdown. They released him today. So, or yesterday. So, you know, it's just not, it wasn't pretty. Hopefully it's an aberration. Hopefully they have something now to look at to say, hey guys, we ain't as good. We ain't as good as we thought we were. And, you know, let's see where it goes.
Now you mentioned this a little bit and I wanted to get into it just a hair more with you, but did you think a little bit, Beckham and Randall, you know, the hamstrings, obviously they played, but they weren't 100%. You think that had an effect upon the offense? I mean, it started to kind of rear its ugly head as the game went on, that they just didn't really have these guys at full strength?
Yeah, I think that they couldn't do what they wanted. At one point, if you go back and watch the tape, which I didn't do, but I do remember watching it at the time, Beckham comes over and tells Nassib to kind of move over, and he sits down next to Eli. And sure enough, on the next series, the first play, he goes full out, beats the guy, and then Eli throws it out of bounds. And you can see how frustrated Beckham was. And I think that was, hey, I can give you a few of these. You know, let's go make it happen. But that was all that they had. And once that happened, you know, Nolan Carroll can't cover him one-on-one. But when he's 80% or 70%, he sure can. And Randall made a few catches on some nice slants. But then, like you said, he slipped and causes the interception, and you know, it just got out of hand too quickly. And like you said, they're just not at a full complement. You and I talked about the defense not being there either, and you know, they certainly just didn't look very good.
You know, I do have to say this though, and you know, we had Mark Eckel on early in the off season from NJ.com. He does the Eagles beat reporter. He discussed the defense a little bit. You know, Chip Kelly is known for his offense. But, you know, you have to give their defense some credit. I mean, they did lead the NFC last year in sacks. Connor Barwin is a guy. Vinnie Curry. These guys get up after the quarterback. Right now they're ranked 6th in points allowed, 15th in yards. I mean, they've kind of held them in. I mean, even that game against the Jets, they broke out to a lead. Foles scored. That's not on the defense. He scored a punt return. You know, the Jets kind of made some mistakes. Let them get out to a 24-0 lead. But in the second half, the Eagles' offense stalled. I mean, they had some wide open looks. They could have easily assaulted the game away, and they never did. And the Jets clawed their way back into it, but the defense held stiff enough to make some interceptions, make some big plays to ultimately preserve that victory. Because the offense, now here's the thing about the Eagles, and I know that you don't like them, and you're their division rival. But Bradford has not been good. Let's face it, he's not been good. Too many interceptions. He's got an 80 quarterback rating, 9 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, but he was able to kind of move the ball, and then it was making mistakes. This game could have been much worse if Sam Bradford can – again, the guy was out all last year. So if he can get a little more rhythm with this offense, with the defense they have – I know you don't want to hear this, Joe, but the Eagles can be better than they've been. They deserve to be 500 right now. They deserve it. And with the way that the offense is played. But – you know, I think that maybe this team is going to rely for most of the year on the strength of their defense and hope that the offense can make marginal improvements in the turnovers and just, you know, stop shooting themselves in the foot when they get down the red zone, those kind of things. If they can, they might be on track to be in the hunt, just like everybody else in this division, to kind of win it. So I just want to get your thoughts on that and what you think of Philadelphia kind of moving forward. Is Chip Kelly's known for his offense, but surprisingly enough, they're winning with defense.
Yeah, you know, I think they deserve to be where they are. I'm not sure he's going to be the – I don't think he's the answer. I think he's late on a lot of throws, Bradford. I think he misses a lot of go. I think it's just not a it just doesn't look like a good fit. But, you know, as they said the other night, it seems like he's kind of coming around to going away from his system a little bit and trying to go to the strengths that he has there with using DeMarco Murray a little bit differently the other night and getting the ball a little bit more and trying to get him to go north and south instead of going east and west. And, you know, I just think that I'm not sure he's the answer. He didn't look good at all. And again, yes, their defense is good as far as the defensive line, but, you know, if you get somebody who's got a good offensive line, you get some max protect and stuff, there's obviously plays that can be made there, and they lose linebackers by the week. You know, I'm just not sure how many guys you can find all along and, you know, week by week and keep replacing guys. And I don't know. I think we're even with them. I think, you know, despite the score of the other night, I think we're an even team with them. And again, it all depends on, you know, we can move into what's going to happen this week. And that's going to be a telling game also for us and for the Giants and see how they go up against the Cowboys. You know, and see where that takes us. But I don't think they're, you know, head and shoulders above everybody by any means.
No, and I don't think that was not really my point. But I think the thing is this, is that they managed to hang around, even though they have not played good ball. They really haven't. You can even look at this game, and if you just look at the score, you might say, well, but you look at Sam Bradford's numbers and say, wow, three interceptions. I mean, that's terrible. One touchdown, three interceptions isn't going to cut it. But they still somehow managed to win. Maybe they weathered the storm a little bit. Like you said, they do have some injuries. The linebackers banged up. Can they continue to move forward, get some guys back healthy, or will they lose some and have to go out on the street and find guys? I mean, that's going to be a key for them. But I just think they're not going away in this division. They somehow or another managed to win ugly. And maybe they can start winning a little bit more conventional with having their offense be a little bit more efficient and, you know, using defense. We'll see how it goes. But obviously right now, the NFC East, it's kind of, you know, it's just week by week. No one's really emerged yet. Dallas, obviously, with all the injuries. So why don't we get into this game? Because usually we wait till later in the show, but it kind of flows real nice to discuss the upcoming game at MetLife Stadium between the Giants and Dallas. And I guess first and foremost, before we get into the Giants-Dallas specifically, Joe, you talked about Marshall Newhouse, the right tackle for the Giants. And, you know, Randy Gregory is coming back in this game, the talented second-round draft pick. And, you know, Greg Hardy is now back in this game. So that adds a little bit of a dimension there, the pass rush, a little help on defense for the Cowboys coming in. So Will Beatty has been activated to practice the left tackle. More likely to come back at right tackle if he is able to play this week or when he's actually going to be put back on the active roster to come play and maybe replace Newhouse, and they're going to leave Eric Flowers at left tackle. Is that the plan?
Yeah, I believe it is, but there's no way he's coming back this week.
Okay.
He started practice today, and what Tom said it twice already this week, and it's only Wednesday. He said he's going to start very slow in individual drills to get him back. You know, he hasn't been in pads yet, so, you know, he's because he got hurt so early. So he's not coming back this week. I think I texted you the other night. He may, if they don't bring him back for Tampa Bay, which is the week before the bye week, they may bring him back in New England. So we're talking about a ways down. I think he's got 3 or 4 weeks before you see him. I know they have 3 weeks till they have to activate him within the 21 days, which gives you the 3 weeks, and then they have a bye week after that. So I'm not sure exactly where they're coming, but you won't see him this week. They're going with what they got this week. And whether it's an improved Marshall Newhouse or somebody else out there, or, you know, chipping with the tight end or figuring out how to double some guys with some extra backs, whatever it is, they're going to have to do it. And just to get the last comment on, you know, the NFC East. John Gruden even said the other night, he said, it's tough to believe this game is for first place. You know, seven turnovers and all the penalties. And, of course, that's a crew that calls a lot of penalties. But it's just, again, this one's going to be another tough one because of that. But they don't have much of a secondary. So, again, can you get it blocked up enough that you can? Their offense, you know, now they're grasping at straws. They're going, oh, you know, Dez Bryant was seen at the, you know, at the facility. Well, that's nice, but I don't think he's going to play. And if he does, he's not going to do anything. You know, it's the same things, right? It's the same cast of characters. You're going to double Witten. You're going to try to stop Joseph Randle, and you're looking to, you know, you're looking to let Sam, you know, you're looking at Castle being, you know, who he is. And it's his first start. He hasn't played in the years in the NFL, and we'll see what he's all about. Matt Castle had one, you know, had a couple of good games. But I don't know. I just think it's the same team without Tony Romo, without Dez Bryant. So I agree the defense is probably better than maybe when we saw them. But we know what they are. We know that they pass rush. We know what they're going to try to do. We know our weaknesses because we just saw them, you know, saw them on full display. And hopefully this team is resilient as it always is and comes back. You know, again, I always think these are the referendums on the coaching staff. People talk about bad losses and they talk about, oh, Tom's done this and Tom's lost the team. I think it's the next week that's the referendum. How do they play? How do they look coming back from that? And so, you know, we'll see where it goes from there. I don't think there's anything new here to see. I think it's going to be your typical Giants-Cowboys game, but the Cowboys don't have the upper hand because they don't have a quarterback. They don't have any wide receivers. It's obvious where they're going with the ball, and we'll see how it goes.
Now, I did see a funny tweet from Manish Mehta, who is a Jets beat reporter, who said that if the Cowboys were healthy, they would have wrapped up this division by Thanksgiving. Now, I know you don't probably believe that, but it was just, I found it kind of humorous because of how sloppy the game was in Philadelphia, and you saw a lot of people reacting to that statement. But, you know, Matt Castle, again, they've decided to make a quarterback switch. And again, is Matt Castle better than Brandon Weeden right now? I guess we're going to find out. Is he going to be able to run the offense better? I guess we're going to find out. Hewitt wants to try to run the ball. Now, that's the strength of the Giants on defense, the run defense, the sixth in the league. Okay, the pass defense has been very shaky, the 30th. So if they're probably going to go in there, I would think the Giants on defense, Spagnuolo, would say, listen, why don't we try to shut this running game down? Let's make Matt Castle beat us. You know, you don't want to. Maybe you don't want Tony Romo to have to beat you, and you have to mix and match a little bit because you're nervous, especially when they're healthy. They're much more potent of an offense. But right now, wouldn't you think that Spagnuolo would be looking at it saying, "All right, we'll shut down Randle, we'll shut down McFadden, we'll shut down Dunbar, we'll shut down anybody they put back there. Let's see if Matt Castle can drop back 40 times and beat us through the air. If he does, we'll tip our cap. If he doesn't, you know." And one guy I want to bring up real quick, the answer is a two-part question. One, you think Spagnuolo will do that. Two is, I happen to think that Landon Collins is really coming along very nice and, you know, has been a I want to say a pleasant surprise, although he was pretty high, just in the first or the second round picks. So you would think that the guy had a lot of talent. But he's done pretty well in a secondary that's been a little banged up. The safety position. You know, he's a guy who looks like he has a bright future there and has kind of solidified things, at least at one of the safety spots. So two-part question there for you, Joe. What does Spagnuolo do, and what do you think of Landon Collins thus far?
Yeah, no, Landon Collins has progressed every week. You know, they worry about the communication just because he's new and having too many young guys back there, but Merriweather's helped with that a lot. You know, That's been great. And again, you don't want to call him a surprise, right? it's something that they certainly expected him to grow into. And he's starting to do it every week and looking better as we go along. And I think you're absolutely right. I think that this is the way the Giants play defense is, you know, they'd love to get the pass rush to, but what they do now is exactly what you said. We will stop the run. We will do everything we can to stop the run. and especially if you have somebody back there like a Matt Cassel, you know, it's that's what you're going to do. We've talked about it every week. Go back and look at the guys who threw the ball 50 times, Philip Rivers. You're going to lose. You just can't do it. You can't, no matter who you are, it's tough to throw the ball 45 times without making mistakes. And that's what they're going to wait for. And they're going to continue to hopefully get them in 3rd-and-7, 3rd-and-8, 3rd-and-9, 3rd-and-6, and double cover Jason Witten and make him look for somebody else. And, you know, hopefully Kennard is practicing today. He's back. Casillas is practicing. He'll be back. A couple other guys. You know, Kennard's a big, big, big part of the pass rush because he has so much speed. And so that's what they'll do. They'll bring Landon Collins down in the box. They'll stop the run for a while, and then they'll say, go ahead, Matty. You know, have some fun, and let's see what you can do.
Yeah, one quick statistic before we move on to our next topic. The Cowboys are -5 in turnovers. They're actually -3 in fumbles. 4 fumbles lost this year, so maybe there might be some opportunities to take advantage of some of their running backs there. They like to kind of cough the ball up, so, you know, maybe you can look at that and say, all right, there's an opportunity there for us to maybe get some short fields, things of that nature, something to keep an eye on. Why don't we kind of move ahead to our next topic, which is something I wanted to get into with Joe, because he's a referee. He understands all the rules. And there was, I don't want to say a controversial play, but a play that was put doubt in people's minds about the actual rule itself, which was Golden Tate caught a pass. And again, Joe, maybe you can explain it better, but look at me, caught a pass, kind of made he established his possession in the field of play, ran in, crossed the goal line, was hit after he crossed the goal line. The ball came out. It was not ruled a fumble. So maybe you kind of take us through that play. People might have it in their mind. It might have been a little confused as to why that's not the continuation of the catch kind of thing. And maybe you can clarify what the rule is and why that was a touchdown and not a fumble.
Yeah, it's actually very simple. And when you see it right away, you know, it's amazing how many of these things you kind of get right if you do it without the replay. If you watch it, it's actually easier to watch it quickly sometimes and to just make the judgment on what you see from there, which is exactly what the guys are doing. You know, basically the difference is what you said, Dennis. He caught the ball in the field of play. So because he caught the ball in the field of play, what do you have to do? You have to just break the plane. So he gets two hands on the ball, he gets 2 feet down on the ground, and he breaks the plane with the ball. The play's over. The play is over at that moment, even though there's been no whistle yet, even though there's been nothing else. Once you go back and look at that replay, and they say he's got the ball in his hands, 2 feet on the ground, in the field of play, and then the ball crosses the goal line just as if he's a runner at this point, just as if he's a running back at this point, breaks the front plane of the goal line, the play's over. And nothing that happens after that means anything. If, and what's confusing to people, and again, what also doesn't help is, of course, the, you know, the network goes and shows the Calvin Johnson play, and they show the other play,
yeah.
And you're like, well, it's got nothing to do with it, so I don't know why you're showing those, just to show your ignorance. If he had caught the ball, and again, this is a very strange thing, if he has the ball in his hands and 2 feet on the ground in the end zone, then he has to complete the catch, which is that a fumble? Did it get knocked out? Did he have full possession? Did he go to the ground? Blah, 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 blah. It adds so much more stuff because you're already in the end zone. It's also, if you go out of bounds, you have to do the same thing. The only time that it kind of changes is breaking the plane. And again, my father used to say when they made all these changes, you know, you used to have to have the full ball over the goal line. You used to have to be down in the end zone for it to be a touchdown. Now the touchdown is almost the easiest play to get. Like, Dennis, there's no restrictions. You can be outside the pylon. You can be inside the pylon. You can do whatever you want. If you just barely break the plane, it's a touchdown. But if you want to catch a ball going out of bounds and going to the ground, you have to have 2 feet in. You got to go to the ground. You got to full secure. You can't move an inch. You can't move a millimeter. If you catch the ball in the end zone, you have to go through all the rules. But if you catch the ball at the goal line and just barely break that plane, you're good and the play's over. So it all stems from the fact that the play actually ends when the plane is broken and he has his hands on the ball and he's, you know, got, and he's gotten at least, you know, 2 feet down on the ground.
So I guess basically the bottom line is here is once he's converted from a receiver into a runner,
right,
that changes the ruling to be what a runner. He's now a runner. So when he's crossing the goal line as a running back would have done on a handoff, if he sticks the ball out and touches the plane, once they put their hands up, that's a touchdown, and then someone comes and swats the ball out, that's not a fumble because the play is then dead. It's a touchdown, dead. Same kind of rule applies for what happened with Golden Tate.
Yeah, basically, it's funny because we have a rule in high school that anytime the ball breaks the plane, the play is over, whether it's on a kick or on, whatever you do. It makes it a lot simpler once the ball goes over. But in the NFL, the rule for a touchdown is all you have to do is break the plane. So once he gets possession of the ball, and he doesn't really even have to make a football move, as long as he got 2 feet on the ground, breaks the plane, the play's over. There's none of the stuff that happened after he broke the plane has any bearing on whether the play was good or not. They keep showing the replay on the network of the guy knocking it out and was it moving? And who cares if the ball's moving after he broke the plane? It's done. So
yeah. Yeah, well, that was good. That's good to kind of clarify that. I had seen that in some highlights, and you had mentioned it, and I thought it would be a good one for you to explain so people understand. It's always good to tap into your expertise. So let's move on to kind of our next topic, which we just wanted to get into quickly before we start getting into this week's slate of games. We got into one already, the Giants-Dallas game. We're going into another big division matchup, which is kind of up my alley. But, Joe, I just, this is interesting. We actually had our friend Ralph Facciano on a while back, and he discussed this about – in the NFL, there are three or four elite teams, and there's three or four, we'll call them dregs, terrible teams. Made a very good point, which is in general true. But this year so far, right now, when you're looking at it, and I know you can look at records, but sometimes records can be deceiving. Tell me in your mind right now that you say, I'm looking at this team. I'm saying they're an elite team, regardless of record. They're an elite team because of X, Y, and Z. I only personally see two. That's what I see in the entire league, one in each conference. But I want to get your opinion first, and I'll tell you, we probably agree, but I want to see what you have to say first.
Yeah, I think, we, as we talked about a little bit off the air, we were wrong about a couple of teams this year. But I think a lot of people are wrong about a lot of teams this year because there's really only, again, you could point to it now and say, put them in the game. You've got New England and you've got Green Bay. And even when Green Bay struggles a little bit, they win. When New England struggles a bit, they win too. And it's just, it's almost like they're in the other class. And then you come down to the Carolinas and the Atlantas and the guys who are kind of on the fringe there that you could see the Denvers where you could see some cracks that you're saying, this isn't going to last forever. And then, there's that Atlanta team, right? Losing to New Orleans, which is the one thing we said they had to be careful of, losing to teams in their division. And, then you get to the next level where everybody's going to be 8-8, 9-7, which is where the Giants and the entire NFC East are.
Yeah, like the Cincinnati Bengals, I have a hard time, even though they played very well, they're 6-0, give them credit, but I have a hard time because of Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton's history. I mean, this is a marathon, not a sprint. This is a you say this a lot in the NFL because teams have started off 6-0 and not made the playoffs. I'm not saying that Cincinnati isn't going to make the playoffs, but look, the Steelers, for all their issues, they lost their quarterback. For all the things that have gone on, they're only two games behind them. Would anyone be shocked if I told you at the end of the year that Pittsburgh actually won that division? So I really can't put Cincinnati right now into the conversation with New England and Green Bay because I just don't think it's because of the quarterback position, period. They have elite quarterbacks. Let's just face it. That's first and foremost what they have, elite quarterbacks. But doesn't mean that their teams are – I mean, look, New England, we're going to get into a little later. They have 19 sacks. Green Bay is – I think they have 17 sacks this year. Like you mentioned, even when their main guy isn't completely 100% on, they have other ways to beat you. They'll beat you on special teams. They'll beat you on defense. They'll beat you on the ground. They'll beat you through the air. And that's what you see from them. They're multifaceted. And that's what you see from the – unfortunately, I hate to say it because one of them is in my division, has been dominating the division forever, and I'm sick and tired of them. And you know what? The Jets are going up there. We're going to discuss this game in a little while. The Jets are going up there to play them. But you know what? Those are the two teams. That could have been the Super Bowl last year, right? Very easily. If it was – Ricardo Rogers, is that his name, who went and tried to grab the ball when Jordy Nelson was right there? And all he had to do was let Jordy Nelson get it, and they would have been in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl would have been Green Bay Patriots last year. It could easily be that this year.
Yeah, and like I've said before on the show to the four people or five that are listening, we have said before on this show that I don't think New England thought they were getting there last year. I think that this is the year that they were pointing towards, that they kind of muddled through. They actually lost the game, but got lucky because Pete Carroll's so bad at coaching, and you know, they thought it was just kind of stuck in there, and you know, it was just theirs to win. And I think they were just shocked as anybody that they won. And now all of a sudden, here's this team that they really, really thought that they were going to have, and a little bit more experience in certain spots. And, you know, they got more running backs than you can shake a stick at. Everybody who walks in there is good. The defense is better than it was. So I don't think there's too many teams. Again, you talk about a Cincinnati, and I do give them credit for going up to Buffalo and winning, and things that we said. I think I called that one.
Yes, you did.
I think I did give them a lot of credit for going up there and winning. And look, but again, Buffalo, the only reason I thought they'd easily beat Buffalo is Buffalo still doesn't have all the players. And Sammy Watkins got hurt again on the touchdown catch that he caught. And so I think they did a good job, but I just don't see them dominating. And like you said, where's Pittsburgh winning games from? You know, they bring in some guy, you know, even somebody said, he goes, we had that guy in the roster, why'd you bring in Michael Vick? You know, this guy got all the, they said he got all the snaps in preseason because Ben didn't need to practice. They want him getting hurt, blah, 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 blah. And they said, you know, all of a sudden this guy walks in and he looks better than anybody they had on the roster. So why'd you bring in Michael Vick? So anyway, I don't know. I agree with you wholeheartedly, Dennis. Right now there's two teams to watch, and there's a couple of guys like a Carolina, like Cincinnati, to keep an eye on and to see if they make a move. Maybe they make a move at the trading deadline. You know, it doesn't usually happen in the NFL, but like it does in baseball, but maybe something happens there and maybe they make a great improvement, but I don't think they're playing as solid as those other two teams.
Yeah. And you know, Carolina, I mean, certainly getting Luke Kuechly back again, they you gotta give them all the credit in the world. They went into Seattle, a tough place to play. They won the game. Luke Kuechly had 14 tackles. Again, Luke Kuechly is a tackling machine. They really missed him. I mean, their defense is very good. Now, again, Seattle having issues, giving up 26 sacks this year. They're 2-4. I mean, again, you know, Pete Carroll come out and say they should be 6-0. And you know, again, a lot of teams would say that. In the NFL, the margin between victory and defeat is very slim for every team. And a couple of plays go a different way, but you know what? It just seems like Seattle has some issues moving forward. We'll see if they get them corrected and put themselves back in the race. Arizona went out to Pittsburgh, and again, everyone thought Arizona was going to win, and again, they lost. We know the only thing you can count on in the NFL is that whatever you think is probably not going to come true. But Carolina, give them all the credit in the world because they've really done it on the strength. I mean, Cam Newton does not have terrific numbers. Let's go over this. He's at 55% completion percentage, 8 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 83 rating. He does have 3 rushing touchdowns. He does have 225 yards on the ground. They are 3rd in rushing. They're 30th in passing. But again, they're so banged up at receiver. They lost Kelvin Benjamin early in the year. I know Jericho Cotri, the veteran, the ex-Jet, he's only had 7 receptions this year. He's been banged up. Greg Olsen is basically the receiving threat. He's even Devin Funchess, the rookie, only has 5 receptions. You know, so they really don't have a go-to guy besides Olsen. Ginn's got 13 receptions. I mean, you know, he is what he is, just an average receiver. So they're going to have to rely on defense and running the ball and Cam Newton being a playmaker to continue. That's why you really can't put them in that elite category, because they can't beat you in different ways, in my opinion, like a Green Bay could. I mean, Aaron Rodgers can just destroy you. You don't see that here, but give them all the credit in the world. They're undefeated. They went to a tough place to play, and they look like they're for real. They're not going to win this division with 7 wins. Let's put it that way.
No, not at all. And they're going to have to keep playing well. And yeah, you know, they went up there. And we, again, another game we called that we thought would be pretty good, and they did well. And, you know, I just think that, again, there are certain guys you just can't trust. I can't imagine that Cam Newton has become – this completely different person in one season, but I give him a lot of credit for finally getting it right and maturing and doing what he's got to do. And I give the coaching staff a lot of credit for getting him there. If in fact it continues, but you and I know sometimes you get under pressure, you go back to what you were. And And we'll see how that goes. But he doesn't have a lot of weapons. So he really has figured out a way to get it done. And like you said, mainly on defense. And, you know, it's these are the teams, again, they're at that – they're just under the surface there of being elite. And you can't put them up with those other guys who have done it before. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, and with that being said, we do want to take a look. I mean, we're not really going to get into the playoff scenario right now. A couple more weeks, we'll have a little more separation. Although I do think that, just quickly, in the AFC, because that's kind of more what I key on, I think that two teams will emerge from the AFC North in the playoffs. And then we'll have to see about the other wild card. And one of the big determining factors as far as whether or not a team will be playing for a wild card or not is a game that's going to happen this week. And that's my New York Jets going up to Foxborough to play that team whose name I don't like to mention too often. I don't know, a Q or something like that. Maybe if you don't say their name, they won't have four rings and torture me for the rest of my life. But here's the bottom line.
That's
in this game.
Correct. That might work.
Yeah, that might work. Let's see. Here we go. Number one defense in the league. Jets have the number one scoring defense. Jets have the number one yards defense, number two pass defense, number two rush defense. And they're going up against the number one scoring offense, second for yards, second in passing, 21st against the rush. Foxborough is a tough place to play. I don't really know exactly offhand, but I think they've won like 19, or they lost a game last year that didn't mean anything, basically. So they've basically been undefeated at home for like the last 15 years. Who the heck knows? Did they beat them in Foxborough? I don't think they beat them in Foxborough.
Oh, no, they did. They broke their streak. That was the Jake Ballard game where he made the same catch that Tyree made in the Super Bowl, where they showed up against, he was trotted up by his helmet. And that was, you know, that was always one of those things. I wrote an article after that week about Tom Coughlin, because Tom has broken up, you know, their undefeated season. He broke up their winning streak at home. He beat Notre Dame when he was at Boston College to break their winning streak. He's been a streak buster because he doesn't really care who you are or how many games you've won. You know, he takes his team up there and gives them a chance to win. And yeah, they broke their streak, you know, a couple of years back of consecutive wins.
Yeah. So, but we all know Foxborough is a tough place to play. Now, look, again, the Jets are 4-1 and they're in position, obviously, right now, still early. They're in a position that, look, they lose this game. If they do lose it, they're going to be 4-2 going to Oakland, and they got Jacksonville after that. So they could end up 6-2 or 5-3 at the halfway point. Now, they're playing a little bit with house money. But if they do lose this game, and we all know it's a tough place to play, the Patriots will go to 6-0. The Jets will fall with 4-2. And who knows what's going to happen with Miami. And look, Miami looked like a different team. We discussed about Dan Campbell. I mean, the Jets, give them all the credit in the world for starting 4-1, but they've been a little bit fortunate with Miami. They caught Miami out in London when their coach was on the verge of being fired. And they didn't play. I was there. I was at the game. They did not play inspired ball, Joe. They did not play inspired ball. Give the Jets all the credit. The Jets came in very confident and played very well and executed and really kind of physically dominated them. The Dolphins didn't look like they were still in Miami. So, and then this past week against the Redskins, now I'm not saying the Jets couldn't beat the Redskins anyway, they had six starters out. I mean, Trent Williams didn't play in that game. DeSean Jackson didn't play. Jordan Reed didn't play. So, again, it didn't hurt that, look, you play who's in front of you, and the Jets are 4-1. But this is an elite team in the league. If they can go up there and beat them, they'll be in first place. That'll be incredible for them. But if they lose, which very well could happen, I think that kind of shifts maybe the focus to, okay, now we gotta look at a wild card and who are our threats for the wild card. That's why this game is kind of important to me, because look, who knows? Because it's still 12 games left, but it's going to be very difficult with the way the Patriots are playing, being two games behind them and having another game against them to catch up. So I'd have to take a look at the AFC right now, and I do think Pittsburgh gets in and Cincinnati. I think they both get in. And I think there's one wild card spot, and I'm telling you, the Dolphins are playing the Texans, and you know what? They win that game, they'll be 3-3, and they're back in the conversation. So, and Oakland is playing San Diego. One of them is going to go to three wins. And my opinion is this, Jones, tell me, just we're going to look at the AFC playoff picture a little bit here because of the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
My opinion is the other team which will emerge will either be from the AFC East, and I'm not necessarily saying it's the Jets, it could be them, or the AFC West. It will either be Oakland or San Diego. I saw them on the San Diego bandwagon. I think they have five winnable games in a row. Doesn't mean they're going to win all five, but I think they can put themselves back in the race as well. We've seen it too many times when teams flip the script going into the latter part of the season. So that's my opinion. So this is why this game is big. Look, if the Jets win it, and so lose the division. But if they win it, they're really setting themselves up to be the front runners for the wild card. And if they lose it, now they're kind of in the pack a little bit, and we'll see how they go moving forward.
Yeah, now if they lose, they like you said, they kind of put themselves back. They're the ones that take the step backwards, because I think you and I were both a little bit high on Miami before the season started, that we thought they were on the right track. Maybe Dan gets them really back on the right track. And I did watch that game. I liked what he did. I liked him going for it on fourth down. I think he screwed up his timeouts a little bit at one point, but he seems to be able to get them to play hard. And, you know, all the guys on the pregame shows that I try not to watch, but sometimes you have no choice. You know, walking in there and making them do extra drills isn't the way to win. Well, you don't know what was going on there before. And just because, you know, you don't want extra practice or you don't want anything else doesn't mean other guys don't respond to it. And something needed to change there, and obviously he changed it, and he'd been there, been on the staff. He knows what needed to change. He knows what guys are going to respond to. And he's an ex-player, and that means a lot because guys take it from him a little bit differently, being an ex-player. So I think that they could obviously, like I said, Houston's just a disaster at this point. Even the great J.J. Watt has disappeared for the last couple of weeks. And I just think that they can win a few games here. If you guys take a step back, Jets take a step back, and Buffalo gets some guys back healthy, you know, LeSean McCoy's back, and all of a sudden, you're like you said, you're just back in the mix. And then you're fighting to stay above water and look for that wild card spot. And I agree with you. That's where it's coming from. And again, big spot for Oakland. You know, we talked about them in the beginning. We were both high on them. We both thought they could do something. This is that game, Dennis. This is the game, even though it's early in the season, then the guys are going to, you know, again, people who want to say we don't know what we're talking about. I think this is a game here now when you say this is one of those division games you've got to go win. And it's in San Diego. You're going to get them later on again. You have to win your division games. Even if you're fighting for a wild card, you still have to beat up on the other teams that are coming to get you. You know, we wrote off, a lot of people wrote off New Orleans a couple of weeks. They go beat Atlanta. Now they go play Indianapolis, who hasn't been able to beat anybody. Atlanta goes plays a very tough defensive Tennessee team. All of a sudden, they could be back in the mix. So nothing's decided early, but there are certainly key games along the way that either put you in the pack or separate you.
Yeah, and, you know, the Jets actually go to Oakland after this. And you know, that, again, that's no gimme game because they got back-to-back road games. They got to go out to Oakland. And the Jets have historically not played well on the West Coast. Look, again, no one knows what's going to happen. I'm just saying that when you look at the standings and you say, well, what could I imagine if I could look in the future 2 weeks? What could I potentially see? Could I see the Jets at 4-3? Sure. Could I see them at 5-2? Sure. Could I see them at six and one? Maybe. I mean, maybe. So there's a lot of different outcomes, but this is a true test for them. I think this year, so they played the Cleveland Browns with Johnny Manziel. They played a Colts team that has not played well, and they're on the verge of firing their coach. They played Philadelphia, where they played sloppy, and they lost. They played a very uninspired Miami team and a very banged-up Washington Redskins team. Not exactly murderer's row right there, but give them credit. They won the games. They played who was in front of them. This is a true test against a really complete team. And what concerns me here is this. The Jets have only given up two sacks this year, which is fantastic. Only two in five games. You know, the New England Patriots defense has 19 sacks on this year. So, also, the Jets are first in rushing the ball in the league. They're first in rushing the ball. And the Patriots are 22nd against the rush. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's correct. 22nd against the rush. So, again, their weakness, the strength of the Jets is the weakness on defense. But it's Bill Belichick. And, you know, I think that Bill Belichick's going to look at this and say, all right, well, again, the Jets offense is Chris Ivory and Brandon Marshall. That's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. And maybe Eric Decker sprinkled in. That's the Jets offense. Chris Ivory, Brandon Marshall, and a little Eric Decker. And it's everybody else. You know, so I think that Belichick, being the defensive-minded guy that he is going to take one thing away from them that they do well. If they're going to put eight down in the box and say, hey, look, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you try to beat us through the air. You let Marshall, maybe we'll let you rinky-dink down the field a little bit, but eventually you'll make a mistake. Like you said, if it's a 10-play drive or 11-play drive, and they're going to throw eight of the 11 plays, will Ryan Fitzpatrick make a mistake? I think that's the way Belichick looks at it. And again, they're now going up against a first-class offense, and they are the best defense in the league. This is really going to be a test for them, and we're going to see what they really are made of, because as of right now, I think their schedule and the games they've played, they have not faced a team anywhere near this. So it is a huge game for a number of reasons, but I think the Jets playing house money, they're the underdogs.
Yeah, I think it's one of those games you kind of call it, it's a class game. You're going to see if you're in their class at this point. You know you've made some strides. You know you've done some things. But that's what this is. This is a class game. You're going to see if you've moved up in class or are you still the Jets and you still need some time and take it from there. And you're nice try, boys, but come back when you got a few more weapons on you. And I still think, as you say, Bill Belichick has played this defense, this former defense. He basically invented it. When the Giants played the Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl in 1990, this is how he plays. He's invented this. If we can make you one-dimensional and we can punish you when we have to, when we get the chance to, and we can make you take 10, 12, 15 plays to go down the field instead of letting you get big strikes against us, we could probably manage it, and you'll probably manage yourself because, we know that you're not Tom Brady and you're not Aaron Rodgers. You're going to make mistakes, and we'll take our chances that way.
Yeah, definitely. And I just want to lay out Tom Brady's numbers, 70.6% completion percentage, 14 touchdowns, one interception, a 118.4 rating. Again, the Jets have really thrived this year. They're plus five in turnovers. Now, last week, they did their darndest to try to hand a game to the Washington Redskins. They were minus three in the first half. And the Redskins were only up by three, surprisingly enough. The Jets can't be minus three in the first half. I think they're only going to be down by 3 points against this Patriots team. So the Jets have sort of really won with defense, turning the ball over, not turning the ball over. Now, that game against Washington, the Jets kind of flipped the script in the second half, got two turnovers, made it to minus one. Again, Washington was banged up. If these turnovers hadn't occurred or the Jets were plus one, this game would have even been more out of hand against the Redskins. But this, again, like you're saying, it's a test. And you know what? If they don't come out with the victory, they're going to come back to the pack a little bit. And you discussed this earlier, and we'll kind of wrap up with this, is if they do happen to lose this game and come back 4-2 and then got to go out to Oakland, the bottom line is to get the ball rolling back in the right direction again. All right, we've come back to the pack a little bit. We lost the division game. Hey, you know what? Let's go out to Oakland. Let's get a victory there. And then we come back and we play the Jacksonville Jaguars to finish up the first half of our season. Let's see where we're at that point. Again, I think 6-2 puts them in a great position to maybe make it. 5-3, 4-4. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be 4-4, but those are the only scenarios possible here. except for 7-1, if they were to lose that game. Again, if they were to lose that game, that's the only possible scenario. So, but 5-3 or 4-4, it kind of just puts you in position, but I kind of say this a lot, and I'm going to wrap up with this. It doesn't matter what NFL teams do in September and October, and I don't mean that they can just go out and lose. But if you are a contender and you're 4-4 and you go 6-2 down the stretch, you're probably making it. If you're 5-3 and you go 1-7 or 2-6, you're probably not making it. So, I mean, that's great. When the weather's warm and it's sunny and it's, 65 degrees, but when it starts to, you got some outdoor stadiums and it starts to get some colder weather, and can you weather the storm throughout a long season? Here's one thing about Ryan Fitzpatrick that I'm concerned about. Is he built to go 16 games? I mean, the guys, he started 2011 and he was 5-2 with the same, well, it was Shane Gailey, the head coach then, who's now the offensive coordinator. They were 5-2 with the Buffalo Bills. They gave him this big contract. After that, they went 1-8. Again, is Ryan Fitzpatrick built for the long haul? Is this team built for the long haul? Will their warts sort of show through? And the Jets' warts will show through on offense. That's where it will be. The offense will not be able to put up the points because the defense is just—it's too good on paper. It's too good, period. And right now, in general, fairly healthy. Hopefully, it continues to be that way. But that's where their warts will show through. That will ultimately be the problem with the Jets if they can't make a playoff push or they start to kind of fall behind a little bit. It will be because of the offense. Let's face it, they have Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's been a journeyman. He's done a nice job managing this offense. He's got an 84 quarterback rating. That's his quarterback rating. 9 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He's been asked to manage a game, limit his mistakes, run the ball. Chris Ivory's been the workhorse. 300 yards rushing in the last 2 games combined. Probably had about 200 all-purpose yards last week. Again, at some point in time, when he had to throw the ball 58 times, we discussed this against Philadelphia, they lost. He's not built to do that. The Jets are a ball control offense. And if they can move the chains with Marshall, run for a nice average, that's the key to success. When those things aren't working, they're going to be in a little bit of trouble. Hopefully they can continue to have that recipe moving forward. We'll see. But this is obviously a big game, big division game. First place is on the line here in this game. It could be the Giants-Dallas game. It could be for first place if Philadelphia were to lose Carolina, depending upon how that game went. So a lot of exciting action going on in both the AFC and NFC East.
Yeah, I think that, you know, these are going to be tight. We don't have a team in either one. You know, you have your Patriots, obviously, but there's no other team that's going to separate themselves, I don't think. You know, we thought Buffalo was going to be taken off and maybe would keep that separation and would stay closer to New England. But because of all the injuries they got, they didn't. We thought the Cowboys would take off and be that separation in the NFC East. That didn't happen because of injuries. If we're getting a theme here. That's how this league is. And like you said, guys get people back. Guys lose people. Different things happen. You adjust to different things on your team, like Philadelphia has done, and you change your offenses a little bit. You change your defenses. This is where it starts, the middle two. Like you said, hey, the Giants went 2-6 and then went 6-2 one year. And you sit there and you say, okay, you went 8-8. The next year, somebody says they're going to win 10 games and they went 6-0. And I said, you realize, guys, you said they're only going to win 10 games. So let's not complain when they lose the next four games, because that's what we all thought it was going to do. So you have to stick with what we originally thought, right? We have to sit here and say, we never thought the Jets were going to win. Well, we joked around and said they could win 4 games all year. But is this an 8-win team, a 9-win team, a 10-win team? Well, if you've already won, if you go up and you win and you've already won 5 games, we said you're only going to win 8. You know, how disappointed are you going to be when you go 3-5 the next half of the year? So it all evens out a little bit, except for those teams like New England, except for those teams like Green Bay that just seem to keep going. Maybe Denver again, since they've already got 6 wins, you know, you figure they're going to get to 10 pretty simply. And that's where those teams get to 11 and 12. I think next week, Dennis, we should go back along our picks and redo them and say the teams we thought were going to – where we thought they were going to go and take off. And, you know, teams like the Chiefs are gone. They're history. Teams like Baltimore are completely out of it. They're not going to come back at any point. So I think it'll be interesting to go over that next week and kind of realign where we stand.
Yeah, I want to give ourselves a couple of mulligans. I know you're the professional golfer, so to speak. But we'll give ourselves a few mulligans and take a look at things and see and reevaluate. Again, some more separation next week. But Joe, just want to thank you for another great episode of Pro Football View from the East. Want to give out our contact information. I'm at PFVFE on Twitter. And Joe is at Tufton, TUFDAN. So, Joe, just a great thank you very much for another wonderful episode. I think a power-packed, kind of in our wheelhouse. But, again, the games are the ones that you look at. And I looked over the schedule. I said, hey, you know what? These are in our wheelhouse. But you know what? They really are kind of, when you look at the big picture, the better games on the schedule here. And it should be a very exciting week of football coming up.
Yeah, I think it's, again, we're getting into the fun part of the season. Unfortunately, some teams have fallen by the wayside, but I think there's a lot more a lot more teams in that middle pack than there are on either end of it, and that's what keeps it interesting.
All right, gang. Well, listen, we really appreciate the listens. We appreciate the downloads. So for Joe Tufaro, this is Dennis Agapito. Please join us next week for another fantastic episode of Pro Football View from the East.